Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of J League Extra Time.
J Talk.
Oh, sorry.
Jesus.
What did I say, J League?
J League Extra Time.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of J Talk Extra Time. My name's John Steele. The next voice you'll hear is my regular co-host and partner in crime, Stuart Smith. Hello Stuart, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you John. That was a very good opening you just did then. I'm very good.
My second stab at it tonight, so
yeah,
I'm glad we got it in the can. But yeah, good to talk to you again, Stu. Now, we still don't have any J League action on the pitch to speak of, but despite that, we do have quite a smorgasbord of topics to run through for the listeners this week. So I think we should probably start just with a quick COVID-19 update from a J League point of view. So again, we still don't have a date for the resumption of matches or you know, any clear information coming out of the J League this week. But we do, that there are some rumours swirling. Can you give us the latest?
Yeah, I can give you an update from the teams and the league itself. I think that a lot of the teams in lower down the leagues have either resumed training or are starting training this week. I know Gifu will start training tomorrow. Fujieda started training yesterday. I think Avispa Fukuoka started training yesterday. And I just want to give a shout out to Navy Blue Wasp, who pointed me in the direction of Daisuke Ishizu's hair, looking very blonde, but you can see the roots coming through. So hopefully after his lockdown he gets to make it to a hair salon, which imagine that, a bald guy giving someone like Daisuke Ishizu some hair advice. But a lot of the teams are back training. Obviously the ones that are in the Tokyo area, I don't think they're allowed yet, but I saw on the news tonight that Osaka and Hyogo, so Hyogo is where Vissel Kobe are based, are going to come out of their lockdown tomorrow. They were two of the kind of most severe lockdown prefectures in Japan. I think Hokkaido and the greater Tokyo area are still going to be under their lockdown for another week or so, is my impression. The league, I think, is, they've been in discussions all this month, and I think they're going to kind of roll out their roadmap to football on the 29th of this month. So what's the date today? The 20th. So probably like next Friday, we're looking at possibly the how we're going to restart and kind of what kind of time schedule we're going to go from. The idea amongst quite a lot of people is that it's going to be a three-stage opening. So we're going to have a more or less a pre-season, maybe in June, and then July will be when football starts, but I think it'll be behind closed doors. And then I think there's a possibility of supporters coming in from August. So from the club side of things, they have an understanding, I believe, that we are going to start football soon. And I think one of the things the league has to take into account is like the competitive balance. I think we spoke about this in a private chat earlier, but just like Gifu are starting training tomorrow, but Toyama, who are in the same league, started training, I think they started training 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago. And so I think it's every club needs to have the same amount of time to build up fitness. I don't know if there'll be pre-season games. I can't imagine there will be. There might be some behind closed doors games, I suppose. But yeah, we from what we said last week, John, we mentioned that the it was in the tea leaves and in the in the DAZN tweets and things like that, that football was coming back, and I've seen nothing over the last week to dissuade me from that view. In fact, just the actions of the teams themselves have kind of strengthened my views that we are going to head back to some kind of J-League this summer.
This is music to my ears, Stu. I think we could all do with a lift after the way things have gone over the past 3 or 4 months. I think what you're saying here about a kind of second pre-season in the month of June, and then games getting underway, albeit behind closed doors, in July, that sounds about right to me. I don't have any inside information that's the case, but I do. Yeah, I think probably the state of emergency pretty much everywhere will be up on May the 31st. Mm. The number of new COVID-19 infections in Tokyo is not many. I think only 5 today and 5 yesterday. So strangely, or maybe not, Kanagawa Prefecture, I think, actually has the most new infections at the moment. 21 today.
Respect.
So that, well, yeah, represent. I still think the state of emergency will be up at the end of May. That means clubs can probably just about train for 4 weeks in June, and then games can come, I presume, thick and fast from July. But yeah, like you said, I think the 29th is when we'll hear a bit more concrete detail on that. So we have to maybe we'll have something to discuss more substantially next week. Okay, well, we'll move on for now then. I think it's a chance to kind of dip into some English language J-League coverage that's not produced by us this week, Stuart, because there were one or two good pieces of English language J-League content that caught my eye this week, and one slightly egregious, slightly annoying one. Let's take the annoying one first. This is the Twitter account, which I'm still not clear. Is it the official J-League English Twitter account, or does it just say it's the official English J-League? Because it doesn't have the verified check, does it?
Yeah, it doesn't have that blue tick or white tick next to it. I think it's supposed to be the official English J-League account. I think that's okay. What it's meant to be.
So for anyone that missed this, Stuart, how did they rub people up the wrong way this week?
Well, they rubbed people up the wrong way by declaring that with the return of the Bundesliga over the weekend, that, quote, football is back. And yeah, that rubbed people up the wrong way, because it intentionally or unintentionally, delete as appropriate, missed the fact that the Koreans and their K-League had opened the week previously to previously unheard of 3 million people watching Jeonbuk and Suwon, I think it was. But yeah, the English account said that the football is back, but some people were quick to point out that football had already returned, albeit in a country that, yeah, probably Japan has its biggest footballing rivalry with.
Yeah, I think you're on the money, and it's not just a footballing rivalry, is it? It goes a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
And I think this is the problem, where if this was an honest mistake or an oversight, it's very unfortunate that it would be the K-League that's the league that's resumed. You know, I don't think there'd be as much kind of not as many eyebrows would have been raised if it had been the Premier League that they'd forgotten about, for example, or pretty much any other league in the world. But yeah, just it's a bit of a strange one. I also found it weird that the J-League account, the account we're talking about, didn't really engage with any of the comments about this, or there was no kind of clarification or apology or retraction or even a kind of doubling down that some kind of internet savvy businesses sometimes do to entice the young people.
It was interesting that the J-League Japanese account didn't do that. The J-League, and because what I did, and I quoted that J-League English tweet, I said something along the lines of, you can celebrate the fruitful route from the J-League to the Bundesliga, because obviously Japanese players have, not all of them, but a lot of Japanese players have made a successful move to the Bundesliga. So you can say something like, good luck to the Japanese players currently playing in the Bundesliga. You've got Makoto Hasebe, I think Yuya Osako is still there, Daichi Kamata. You can say something like, it'll be good to see Japanese footballers back in action again in the Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. But I just think that if it was intentional, then, I mean,
it's a poor show, isn't it?
It is a poor show. If it was unintentional, I don't know. Like, I have a hard time imagining that someone involved in football didn't realize or didn't remember that the K-League started last week, because every man and his dog knew that the K-League had started. And it's a bit amateurish, to be quite frank. And now maybe that's what the J-League English account is. And if it is amateurish, and if it is an amateur doing it, then I'm not sure what else they expect. But it was, it wasn't a very good thing to see, no.
Yeah, it was a little bit unseemly. I think my take is probably that I think this is true, and that I've got another comment to make about this a little bit later, but I think the J-League was a little bit embarrassed by how quickly and how efficiently the K-League kind of shut down the K-League initially, like before a ball had been kicked. Mm. Because if you remember, I think the K-League was supposed to start on the 1st of March or the first weekend in March.
But they
announced, I'm pretty sure they announced the kind of postponement of their start even though the J-League went ahead and played the first round. And I think that is something that optically is quite bad for the J-League, I think. So they perhaps might have the policy they don't really want to draw any attention to the K-League right now, because the K-League looks like a model of good, we'll get onto this later, but pretty much a model of good COVID-19 governance.
Yes, I'm teasing
a lot of content this week. It's coming up. Okay, so we don't know enough about that to decide whether it was just an honest, an unintended insult or there was something, there was more to it. But on the positive side, there was a pretty good 45-minute English language J-League roundtable that was posted on YouTube this week. So this was Harry Sugiyama. He was the moderator, and it was Jay Bothroyd, Mitch Langerak, and Michael Olunga having a sort of English language chat about the J-League. Did you have a chance to watch this, Stuart? And what did you think of it, if you did?
Yeah, I did watch it, actually, and I enjoyed it. I think it was... they're a good mix of people, those, actually. I know there's probably some who are listening to this who aren't big Jay Bothroyd fans, but he's pretty direct, and he says what comes into his mind. Mitch Langerak is, first of all, he's a very, very, very handsome guy, and he is a handsome goalkeeper, which you don't find very often. But he's
where are we going?
I need to back up a little bit. Back up. He spoke well, and I think in fact they all spoke well. But I think the interesting dynamic was I don't know if it was Harry Sugiyama or whoever was pushing the buttons behind, but they weren't shy on showing when Kashiwa thumped Sapporo on the first day of the season, and they didn't hold back showing Jay Bothroyd smashing a couple past Mitch Langerak last season. And I think it was good to see them speak to each other. It was good to see them kind of answering direct questions. You know, when we did the Room 101 and we did those, and I think it was Cesare put in hero interviews or that kind of stuff. I think one of the arguments we had was that the questions are bland, the questions are designed for people just to say the minimum required. But I think the answers that Langerak, Jay, and Michael Olunga gave, they're footballers' answers, but I think they just had a bit more a bit more detailed, like, because so when they were talking about their respective training conditions, or like Mitch Langerak was doing kind of virtual goalkeeper training on Zoom and stuff like that. I think that's the kind of stuff we don't really hear that much. I know Jay is pretty prominent on social media sometimes, but I don't remember hearing a lot from Olunga and Mitch Langerak. So it was good to hear from them. And I think all in all, it could have been a lot worse, but I actually thought it was a pretty kind of entertaining 45 minutes. What did you think?
Yeah, I concur. And I think anybody who's interested should definitely try it out and give it a click, because the only way that we can let the J League know we want more of that kind of content is by watching it and promoting it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think one of the problems with player interviews or hero interviews generally is there's just the context of like being interviewed straight after a match, or, you know, at the side of the training pitch,
yeah,
in the middle
right.
of a training session. Right. It kind of means I think footballers often get labelled as being like, let's be honest, like thick.
Hmm.
And it's often just a problem of you, they're given questions that nobody could really make anything out of or give you an interesting answer to. And we discussed it on the pod, right? Like, oh, are you disappointed that you lost? Yes. Would you like to win next week? Yes. you know, kind of thing. But yeah, it was good to get the those three players in particular were pretty erudite, pretty forthcoming, I think. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I would like to see more players given that kind of platform, if you like. So yeah, it was good, and it was good. We don't get that much good official English language daily content, I think, on video especially.
Mm.
So props to the J League for that. More good English language content. I want to just give a brief shout out to Stuart, and I want to thank who sent me this, Daniel Avispa. Where is, oh no, I had it already. Avispa Daniel, at Avispa Daniel on Twitter. Yeah, he listens, I think, to a podcast called Voices in Japan. And I know we don't usually promote other pods on our pod, Stu, out of militia.
Yes, but I'm
breaking the mold here. I've never listened to it before, and I was busy today, and I didn't have time to listen to the whole of this, the latest episode, but the guest on this week's Voices in Japan podcast was one of Consadole Sapporo's interpreters. And given that the gentleman speaks with a pretty broad Brummy accent from Birmingham, I'm pretty sure he's probably Jay's interpreter, Jay Bothroyd's interpreter. But it was a good, I made it about halfway through before I had to get back to work, but it was a good listen. And there's some really good nuggets of information in there. From my point of view, I'm sorry, I don't have the name of the interpreter who's interviewed right now.
I think it's Harry something. Mm.
Sugiyama. No.
No, not that one. It's too many Harrys.
Yeah, but yeah, he was talking a little bit about his inside track is that games will start in July.
Okay.
In the J League, that was something that he kind of said. Couldn't reveal his sources, but he made it clear that that's what everybody's expecting. But he was also talking, interestingly, about, I think, Sapporo's pre-season games were in Thailand, in Chiang Mai, I guess, late January, early February this year. And they played against a K-League team or two, and he was saying, let me make sure I get this right, they were on a plane at one point with players from one of the K-League teams that was also doing pre-season training, and all of the K-League players were like wearing masks. And none of the Sapporo players, because that wasn't the advice at the time. This is not a slight against Sapporo at all, but I don't think there was any advice about COVID-19 at that point. So I think some of the Korean players were even making the point like, you guys need to look at this, you need to maybe wear masks and be a bit more wary. And it's interesting what came to pass after that, and it kind of circles back a little bit to what we were talking about with the tweets from the joke earlier. But yeah, it's worth giving it a listen, I think. We were talking in the green room beforehand, it's hard for me to listen to other people's podcasts. I'm hyper competitive. Yeah, it was a good listen, and it's very well produced as well. So anyone who wants to listen to that and get a kind of a bit more insight into the goings on at SAPRO and in the J League in general, it's worth giving that a listen this week. All right, Stu. So we've been saving up the good stuff for last this week. So I saw a lot of headlines on Twitter. FC Seoul apologizes for sex dolls in stands. And I've led a very sheltered life. I don't really understand what's going on here. Can you expand on this? What's the deal here?
What's the deal here? Well, if ever a headline kind of summed up exactly what the deal was, that was it. I think it's something we're going to come on to in a minute. Not sex dolls, but the idea of enhancing the experience of football without fans. But basically, yeah, due to some kind of administrative error on some kind of epic scale, instead of getting just regular kind of department store mannequins, FC Seoul managed to bring in a group of sex dolls. I keep saying sex dolls, but
you mean adult entertainment products?
Yes, exactly. And dressed them up in FC Seoul kits and made them look very fashionable. But yeah, they still were what they were. And yeah, FC Seoul got a fine. There were I read some of the K League United people saying that a points deduction was one of the options available, but I think that a fine and just telling whoever did order the mannequins just to kind of broaden his horizons a little bit more would be a good way to go here. But we're gonna come on to the empty stadium, because I think we both assume that we are going to start off in empty stadia. We're not going to start off with supporters in the stadium, John. And like, what do you think? Do you think, because I think some K League teams pump sound crowd noise into the stadia as well. But there's issues around, like, do you let people come in and put cardboard cutouts or bona fide mannequins in? Do you let some supporters come in to hang up banners? And that kind of thing. So, like, when it comes to making football appealing in an empty stadium, where do you stand on those issues?
I think this is a we've made light of a potentially difficult issue, I think, for clubs coming up. Yeah, because we're looking at behind closed doors games, I think, at least initially in Japan. Reading things about the Premier League, I know that they're expecting the rest of this year potentially they won't be having any fans in the stadium. So yeah, I think clubs do need to think about ways to mitigate the fact that, if we're honest, watching a game on TV that's being played in an empty stadium is pretty dull. And I think we might have this problem of when football, and this is with all respect to the K League and other leagues, but for example, the Premier League comes back, there'll be this initial wave of people watching and voraciously consuming everything. But I think after a week or two, when it's in an empty stadium and you can hear the players, shouting to each other, whatever, it's kind of, I don't know how you feel, but I watched a few of those training games that were shown on DAZN in March, which seems like a million years ago now. But even when I was looking forward to the game and wanting to watch, it was a pretty dreary kind of experience. I think part of that was down to the fact that they were nothing games, they were just friendly games, but also, yeah, having no atmosphere was a problem. So yeah, how do clubs mitigate that or build an atmosphere? I think pumping in crowd noise is one option. I think some clubs have had good ideas, like not to labour the point on the mannequins. I don't think it's a bad idea in principle. And then some clubs, I think one Bundesliga club would let fans could pay €20 and have like a cardboard cut out of themselves printed and then put in their seat if they were a season ticket holder, to kind of virtually populate the stands. But I don't know. I think we're definitely looking at it's a difficult problem to address, I think. What would you do? Let's say that we were given this, you know, Gifu have asked you to come up with ideas for the first behind closed doors game, Stuart. What are you going with?
I'm not going with crowd noise. I don't like the idea of, and I know it would only be temporary, but I don't like the idea of supporters being replaced. I can see why it is appealing to do it, but I don't think it works. I don't think it would sound right, and I don't think that it would. I don't think it would work properly. I think what I would do is I'd let supporters come and hang their banners, like, because the J League supporters have a huge array of kind of banners that they hang over the sides of their stand, or they can put flags on their seats or whatever. I'd try and do something like that. Obviously, people would have to wear masks, and they wouldn't be allowed to sneak in and stay in the stadium. But I think something like that, maybe cardboard cutouts. But again, like, I don't want I don't want a team or a stadium to become a figure of fun, which is kind of what FC Seoul has become due to this. People are looking at FC Seoul and they're thinking, they're the club that puts sex dolls on their like in their stadium, instead of thinking of FC Seoul as one of kind of the continent's like kind of biggest clubs and that kind of thing, like the flagship club of the capital of Korea. And I think that
these things can backfire, can't they? Like crowd noise, for example. Some clubs already play crowd noise because the stadium's very empty and the atmosphere is very flat, even with paying supporters. I think in England, definitely, when I grew up, that was always a something that your club would be made fun of if they did that.
Yeah, I think that would be my advice if I was asked. I'd say, look, do what you have to do, but don't make it so that people will just people will see like a picture from like a quote unquote kind of like lads sports Twitter account saying these knobheads in Japan put X, Y, and Z on their seats. Aren't they a bunch of dicks? I wouldn't
like four J League club boobs with sex doll supporters.
I don't want things to kind of become like just a laughing stock, because it doesn't really do anyone any good. I think that the thing about the banners would be a good kind of a happy medium to go with until supporters are let back in the stadium. I think
that's fair, and I think something that I seem to make the same point to varying degrees each week, but so apologies if it's boring for any listeners, but I think a lot of the discussion has been around how do we make the stadium look normal, or as normal as possible. And I think maybe something that we've talked about before when we've talked about racism in the stands, for example, or racism in the game, it's, you know, the football has to reflect the society, or it automatically reflects the society. So I think if things outside are not normal, it's probably a bit Orwellian to then try and make the stadium as normal as possible. Does that make sense? So
yeah, it does. And that kind of feeds into why I don't want like crowd sounds piped in.
Yes, I see.
Because like that would give... this is just like a normal game. The fans are here, but they're actually not here. But it doesn't really matter that the fans aren't here, because we can still, like, we can still hear them or whatever. And I didn't know about that team in the Bundesliga that charged whatever it was, €20.
I've seen it on Twitter, but I can't remember which team it is now.
That seems ridiculous. I wouldn't do that if I. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know if you're expecting. something else, but that seems ridiculous, like just to charge someone to put a cardboard cutout of yourself on a seat? I mean,
well, I think the club like prints it out and does everything.
But still have to pay for it, right? Imagine if you had a season ticket, and maybe they gave it free to season ticket holders. I don't know, but just the fact that
don't forget the Bundesliga is the best league in the world.
Well, maybe they can make cardboard cutouts. Well, maybe they can make cardboard cutouts of Japanese fans and just march them out. But like, I think like what I'm getting, what I'm getting to is that like, I don't want people to think it's okay to replace fans. So it's not okay to replace them with cardboard cutouts. It's not okay to kind of just pipe some noise in and say, "Oh, we've got a great atmosphere as well." Like, outside the stadium is not normal. So inside the stadium should not be normalized. This is, this will be, hopefully, touch wood, like an event that won't be repeated. So what I would say is that you have to make the stadium, A, you have to make it safe, but B, you have to make it so that kind of people will look at it and say, "Oh, right, yeah, they're doing it behind closed doors. They're doing it right. They're not doing any kind of showy kind of stuff. They just want to get these games done and wait to welcome people back in."
Yeah, when we're even older and balder than we are now, we look back on photos and videos of games that have been played, for argument's sake, in July this year in J League. I want to know instantly that was a COVID-19 game. I don't want any doubt. I don't want any. I don't want old crowd footage cut in to the game when the ball goes dead. I think one. I read one news story about that the Premier League wants to like have CGI fans, in the stadium, and they've got enough money and enough their power craze that they might actually go through with something like that. I think it's a difficult one. I think having the fans' banners in the stand is good because they can add new banners that are perhaps in support of health workers whatever. So yeah, I think that's a good halfway house. The only other thing I was thinking was I think teams that are playing at home still need to have some semblance of home advantage, which a lot of that is generated by having more of your fans in the stadium than the opposition. So I think that is a potential problem. So I don't know. I can see why some clubs do play like home fan crowd noise. They play like booing noises for the other team.
Well, if they want home advantage, they should just squirt a load of soap over the visitors' changing room floor and see where that gets them. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that Grimsby tweet where they said, can't we just get a recording to say, like, "Town, this is rubbish," every 5 minutes. I was going to say, thinking about my years watching Stoke, they have to have some booing for the home team as well.
Yeah, exactly, home disadvantage, that's what it is.
Yeah, well, I think we can probably throw that open to the listeners, Stu. If anybody has any good ideas, or even we'll take bad ideas, to be honest, about improving the atmosphere, or even improving, generating any kind of atmosphere, and should we, is that even a good thing that we should do, or like we were saying a little bit here, should we just let it rest a little bit, considering the kind of wider context of football at this point? I think we should wrap it there. I think, Stuart, we've blazed through all the topics that we could muster up this week. So thanks again for accompanying me on that journey through the J League and K League underworlds.
And it was a journey. We did well to come out the other side of it. But good to talk. I'm sure she'll be back on the airwaves soon.
Don't forget, you can always catch up with Stuart at @sushi_football on Twitter, and tell him how wrong he is about the cardboard cutouts for €20 in the Bundesliga. at J2 Canto Bikes is where you can find me. Very sporadic at the moment because I'm quite busy at work, but I tweet when I get the chance. I just want to close and say thanks to all the listeners, especially the Patreons. Help to keep things ticking over, keep the lights on and the microphones on. But anybody who listens, streams and downloads, we really appreciate the support, and thanks for taking the time to listen to us. That's all for extra time this week, so have a good week, and speak to you again soon. Okay, bye for now.